From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Thundering Blue in the center, tackled by Desert Encounter, and Desert Encounter ranges up. Desert Encounter on the outside of Thundering Blue, and Desert Encounter full of run. Desert Encounter, Andrea Zerzini's won it. Great performance.
Sitting on Go continues to close. There's one furlong left. Midnight Bourbon comes away with the lead. Sitting on Go continues to close. Here comes Sitting on Go, who's up for the lead at the 16th pole. Sitting on Go up over Midnight Bourbon and Superstock. Sitting on Go, 24-1.
Welcome to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Dothraki Queen snuck through toward the rail. Bold Quality's running after her, though. Here comes Bold Quality running after Dothraki Queen. Dothraki Queen, Bold Quality. Dothraki Queen up the inside to victory.
They have a furlong to run, and she has turned them away. And she is going to make this her own personal playground. Tippin going on to win the Rico Woodbine Mile.
Now, here's Mike Penna.
Welcome back. Hour number three is upon us here on the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment. This, the show that launched a network, and it's going to be a busy third hour of the show. Absolutely jam-packed. Begins momentarily within the room with Sean Clancy. His visit, one-on-one, jockey-to-jockey conversation with Jack Gilligan. 10:25, Kurt Becker takes you on his weekly stroll through racing history, presented by Lane's End and Keeneland. And at 10:30, it is the return of our brand new weekly segment, I Ask, They Answer, with two guys who are never shy about voicing their opinions, trainer Dale Romans and turf writer Tim Wilkin. That's all coming up here in the third hour of the show, so it's one that you won't want to miss. And by the way, if you did miss any portion of the program so far, or you missed any of the segments we brought your way, all you have to do is head back to our website, horseracingradio.net. You can check out the podcast of this show and all of our programming, all of our special segments, including I Ask, They Answer, including In the Room with Sean Clancy, Kurt Becker's Stroll Through Racing History, Unsung Heroes, presented by Claiborne. All of those segments broken out individually for you on our website, so you can go back and listen at your leisure, and make sure you do it, because there have been some really fantastic segments that we've been able to bring your way. And my thanks to everyone who's been involved in making those possible. All right. Poll question today. And so many of you are weighing in. Pulling it up right now for you. Here we go. There it is. Who wins today's Rico Woodbine Mile? Set piece, Raging Bull, ride a comet or other. And right now, Set Piece continues to lead the way. 38% of HRN Nation saying it's going to be Set Piece who gets the victory in today's Woodbine Mile. It's a special day. Winning, you're in action all over the place. You heard from Darren Rogers. You heard from Jim Lawson at Woodbine. It's going to be a big day. All right, In the Room with Sean Clancy comes up to kick off hour number three. He sits down one-on-one, jockey-to-jockey, with Jack Gilligan.
This is In the Room with Sean Clancy.
I'm Sean Clancy, and I'm in the room with jockey Jack Gilligan. I was standing here at Keeneland, kind of on a quiet off day at the sale. And for you, you know, you got hurt earlier this spring and kind of in between coming back and seeing where you're going next.
Yeah, you know, I'm sort of been taking a bit of a vacation this summer. It's been unfortunate, you know, these repetitive concussions caused me to take some time off. But hopefully this fall, I'm going to get reevaluated and hopefully be back in the saddle soon enough. But, you know, I'm taking this time to enjoy the racing, been up to Saratoga this summer, and like I say, enjoying the sales now. Beautiful September day, so nothing better really here at Keeneland.
Yeah, it's got to be hard to not be riding and wondering your next step, I guess.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, you know, the first sort of month, it's nice to be able to eat whatever you want. but, you know, it soon wears off, you know, and yeah, it's definitely been pretty hard the last couple of months, you know, missing it. And, you know, when you go into the races and stuff, it's weird watching it from the ground, and you know, you kind of feel like you're out of the circle a little bit all of a sudden. So yeah, I'm pretty eager to get back to it.
Yeah, for a young guy, it's hard. I mean, you get this kind of, you're rolling, things are going well, and then all of a sudden the rug gets pulled out from under you, basically.
Yeah, you know, I've kind of been, the last couple of years, I had a couple of little falls and been stop and go, and like, I finally got back going good again, and like, I hooked up a real good trainer down there in Louisiana, Shane Wilson. And I was riding first call for him, and we had a really good meet there at the fairgrounds. And you know, just stuff like that happens. It's part of the game, unfortunately. You know, it isn't a matter of if, it's a matter of when. And, you know, most jockeys have to go through it at some point in their career. So, you know, hopefully I've got all my bad luck out the way and might be able to get a bit of clear sailing for a couple of years at least.
Yeah, how hard is it mentally? I mean, how do you deal with the not riding and the uncertainty?
Oh, it's tough, you know, because, you know, especially I found with me, you know, with my height, I was always worried about my weight getting out of control, you know, with time off. And, you know, so that's always a thing. It's like, it's scary being like, okay, maybe I'm fit to get back riding, but then I'm physically not able to because, you know, if my weight gets too high. But luckily I've been able to keep it down over summer, so I'm pretty confident I'll be able to get back down around weight. But yeah, it's a thing because when it's something you've done your whole life and the only thing you've ever wanted to do all your whole life, it's, and especially because I'm young, I haven't really had retirement in the plans in the near future. So it's one of those things that it gets sprung upon you and you're like, have to think, oh, like, what could I do? What else is there, you know? And I mean, that's the good thing as well about horse racing is there's so many different avenues you can take with it. So that's what I mean. I have talked and played with different ideas this summer of what to do, but ultimately I think I want to stick out a couple more years at least riding, you know, may go down a training route eventually.
You crazy, a trainer?
I know, I always said it, you know, my dad trained back in England and I always watched him growing up. I was like, I don't want to do that, like, that is just miserable. But I don't know, it'd probably be a natural path for me. I know a lot of trainers over here have ridden me because I think more because I was a good horseman and a good jockey, they like my feedback and stuff. So I think I've got a bit of a natural touch for it anyways. And yeah, you know, it's probably a nicer job over here than it is probably in Europe being a trainer, I'd say. And yeah, you know, it's good you get to stay in that, you know, in the racing group, you know what I mean, and be at the racetrack every day and, you know, be around the horses, which is all the things I love. So it'd be a good happy medium anyways.
Yeah, it sounds like a good plan. Take us back to the beginning, growing up in England from a racing family, racing background. I mean, is it always something you always wanted to do, being a jockey?
Oh yeah, so, you know, in England, you know, the yards, a lot of people, you know, we live on the yards, everyone has their individual yards, isn't like the back stretch here. So, you know, mum and dad were training before I was born, and so I just grew up, I was in the shed rows every single day from I was in the pushchair, you know what I mean? And, you know, obviously went to races from a very young age, and just, I don't think I've ever wanted to be anything else than a jockey that I can remember. You know, sat on my first racehorse when I was like 3 years old, you know, and had ponies and then did pony racing and then, you know, started riding out before school when I was like 13 and a half was when I started, and I'd ride out a set for my dad before school every day, and you know, just been preparing for it, been planning for it my whole life, you know, hated school, couldn't wait to leave. And I say 2 weeks after I graduated, I rode my first race when I was 16, and that's all I've done ever since then. So I guess it's kind of boring in a way, but, you know, I'm lucky that I've, you know, I've had a dream and I've been able to do it, you know, which a lot of people don't get that. So I've been very lucky.
Yeah, I was one of those kids. I'd get out for my dad in the morning and go to school, and you're sitting there and watching the clock go backward, right? Just sitting there, like, waiting for the 3 o'clock bell, right?
Exactly. You know, it's like when it gets, you know, when you get the itch for it, you know, you just, it's just nothing else occupies your mind, you know, you just want to do it, live and breathe it, and it's a nice feeling. And, you know, it's funny, when you get doing it as a job, you kind of lose that a little bit, you know, there's, you know, times when you're struggling or, you know, just worse of times in your career, and you forget that, you know, sometimes. So yeah, it's kind of been good almost having this bit of time off, because it's kind of made me take a step back and appreciate it, really. I think a lot of people kind of lose the reason why we do it, we're just doing it, you know. But it's one of those things, it's good to take a step back every now and again and kind of appreciate what you got and what, you know, what a great privilege it is really to ride them and, you know, being such a good sport like this.
So take us back to working for Sir Mark Prescott. How was that?
That was amazing. So at the time, I'm not going to lie, I struggled. It was so much hard work. I mean, he was old school. You know, he's still the longest serving trainer in Newmarket. And he does everything the way it should be and the way it was done back in the OG days. And it was tough, you know. I, you know, obviously I worked with my dad and stuff like that, but, you know, he did things the way things normally are done nowadays, you know, easy evening stables and stuff like that. But, you know, we'd be in there 4:30, you have 3 or 4 horses to look after, hay water, skip them out. And you know, the stools had to be done to such a high standard all the time. The horses had to be done up to the best of standards, like you're turning out for owners every single night. You know, hey, we had to, you know, quarter mark them, oil their feet, and he'd come around at 5 o'clock every day, and you had to be ready and show your horse. And it was very good foundation for me. I think everyone should do it. Everyone should spend a year for some Art Prescott. I think you'll it'll make your standard so much higher, you know. And yeah, it was great. And he's obviously such a great man. He, you know, you've probably heard his stories. And you know, if anyone's never heard him speak, definitely look him up on YouTube. He's got so many great interviews and so many great stories. And yeah, you know, I was lucky enough, you know, since leaving there and coming over here, I've gone back and visited a couple of times. And I've you know, he's invited me up to the gallops with him and just kind of be there on the other side of things where, you know, the owners stand with him. And it's so brilliant. You know, he's a great guy. And yeah, you know, I look back over very fondly now, although at the time I was kind of like hated it, you know, like, but it was just, you know, the hard work. But it was good for me in the end.
Well, they say I spent a lifetime there one year.
Yeah, it kind of feels that way, but it's beautiful. You know, like the you know, Heath House stables are so beautiful and all the staff there are great. And it really is just a great experience. You know, if you're ever in Newmarket, definitely, you know, it's a place you should visit and try and meet him for sure.
Yeah, I go for the Tattersall's Horse and Training Sale, and he brings out the horses, and it's a big show and a big production. And a lot of people are like, oh, we got to go to Sir Mark's, you know, his production. But it's so brilliant, especially the first time you're there. It's like just walking back in time.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and he's done a very good job. You know, he's kept the whole charm of the yard, but he's, you know, they've installed like a swimming pool, treadmill. Like, he's very, you know, he's up to date with everything, but, you know, it's still got that old charm. And it's like fairy tale almost when you walk in there. It's good.
So how long you rode in England for a bit and then came here? Talk me through that move, starting in England and then the move to America.
So yeah, so I graduated when I was 16, and I rode first as an amateur for like four rides. I was lucky; I won my second race at Newbury for my dad, so that was great. And then I switched and I started working for Sir Mark Prescott, and I became apprentice to Sir Mark Prescott. So that was like the fall of 2013. And I was with him for a year, and I had about, I guess I had about 40 rides, in that year. I did okay. I won four races and, you know, a bunch of places, and, you know, things were actually kind of looking like they're going to pick up. I didn't have an agent or anything. I was just, you know, in England, it's a slow burn. You start off slow and pick it up year by year. And originally the plan was just come over here for the winter. And so when I was in the British Racing School, I did a student exchange with the American Racing School, and I got to meet Chris McCarron and stay with him. So he was my contact over here. So when I come over here, he hooked me up with a job galloping, and that was the fall of 2014 was when I come over here. And then I ended up riding Turfway for the winter time, and I did very good. I ended up being second lean rider there. And because of that, and, you know, not having to muck out, I guess, you know, I thought I'd keep in, you know, keep trying and stayed here, and, you know, rode here in Kentucky for, you know, all year round for a couple of years and did really good, you know. You know, rode mostly for the people around Keeneland and the Thoroughbred Training Center in Lexington. And then eventually I branched out more to Churchill Downs. And then that's kind of where my career picked up at second level. You know, I started riding for some bigger trainers, you know, Asmussen, Tom Amos, Brett Calhoun. And then I started going down to the fairgrounds, and in the winter, it was like the winter of 2017, 2018, and had a great first meet down there. I went like 28 races. And I loved it down there. I really loved Louisiana. And so that was my circuit the last couple of years, was, you know, Churchill, Keeneland, Ellis Park, and then the fairgrounds. And life's been really good, you know.
Now that's a long leap from Sir Mark Prescott's yard at Newmarket to fairgrounds, right? And Bourbon Street and fairgrounds.
Yeah, it's a bit of a change of pace for sure, you know. But yeah, you know, I'm very fond of New Orleans. I love it down there and love all the people down there. It's been good to me. So it's just been unfortunate. I haven't been lucky with my injuries there at the fairgrounds, but, you know, I won my first grade stakes race down there on Silver Dust. And yeah, so definitely fond memories of that place.
So take us through the process of you get hurt in the spring with a concussion, and then it's a matter of just trying to get better and feel better, and then just gradually take it from there. I mean, I've suffered some concussions and kind of know the process a little bit of just slowly trying to kind of get back to yourself, I guess.
Yeah, you know, it kind of first started. I had a bad fall a couple of years ago. Horse went over the rail. I got knocked out, and I just never, you know, I got back riding like 3 days later. And, you know, I was uneducated with, you know, concussions basically, and you know what the process is and how long it takes to heal. Like, my body felt okay, but and I thought my head felt all right, and a lot of time you do feel not too bad, but you don't realize you do change, and you just don't even realize it. And as it turned out, you know, when I got properly reevaluated, I went down to Tulane University Sports Institute, and they're very good. They do a lot of the football players, and you know, they run a whole lot of tests on me, and you know, discovered my balance was, you know, not what it used to be. My reaction time was bad, and it was funny, you know, this past year I was like, oh my, have I got scared? Or, you know, I'd noticed in races when I was in behind, I'd like be indecisive and like just like not knowing what to do, and it was so strange for me. And I was like, I thought maybe my nerve had gone, but as it turned out, my visual processing had kind of been decreased compared to my last concussion test back in 2015. And that makes, so that's why I had that feeling, because it was like a lot, you know, when you're riding, you're concentrating on balancing, you're looking at the situation in front of you and how it's unfolding, and then you try and make decisions. And because that was effective for me, I was struggling with it, and that's why I was getting those feelings. So, you know, it's really good that it got caught, because, you know, that's what I mean, like, it would have just meant that, you know, I probably would have, you know, messed up races, and, you know, all of a sudden my career starts going downhill, you know. So hopefully it's been caught now, and I've been working, they've given me a computer program which I do every day, which has a lot of like brain training exercises, and then obviously I go to physiotherapy for my balance. And you know, over the summer, it just takes a while, they said it could take 6 to 8 months. And so, but I felt a big progress the last couple of months actually. My headaches have gone away, and I definitely feel my balance is back to where it used to be. And so that's when October 14th is hopefully I'm getting my next appointment, and hopefully my concussion test will come back a lot stronger, and we'll be back in business.
Yeah, I think I said it to you. The one thing you learn about concussions is that you actually don't know how bad you've felt until you feel better. It's months later you look back and go, whoa, I wasn't feeling great then.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I was had sort of pressure on my head all the time, and it's one of those things you just learn to live with it. But that's just, you know, it shouldn't be that way, if you know what I mean. And obviously, you know, struggling with different, you know, feeling more emotional and stuff like that, and you just put it down to other things, like, oh, is it just because of what's going on in my life right now, or other things like that. But, you know, when you see, when it's all laid out in front of you, you all start connecting the dots, and you realize, yeah, these are symptoms, you know. And so anyways, I'm glad it's been caught, and yeah, it's frustrating to miss all this time, but hopefully, you know, it gives me a chance now that I can be healed back up 100% and be able to perform back to my best.
Yeah, I can promise you, I've lived through it all, and you do, you come out the other side, and you start feeling better, and the further away you get from the concussions, the better you feel.
Yeah, and, you know, I think, I'm glad, you know, it seems like the culture's changed a little bit over here, where they are prioritizing, you know, doing the right thing a bit more. I think a lot of times in the past, you know, it's like you rode as well, you just want to get back out there as soon as possible, you know. But really, you know, sometimes it's just not the best thing to do. You got to do what's right for your body a lot of the time, and it's a hard decision to make. But I think, you know, it's better now. The racetracks are getting a bit more safety orientated, and just try to make everything a little bit better for the jocks and our well-being.
No, it's important to talk about. I mean, I think it is. It's certainly one of those things you want to talk about. You don't want to cover it up, because the years past, I mean, you were like the tough guys. You just go out there and ride again, and that's the worst thing you can do.
Yeah. You know, it always used to be a bit taboo, you know, talking about concussions or injuries, or, you know, feeling certain ways and stuff like that. And, you know, it's been good. A lot of the, you know, more senior jockeys have come out. I remember Trevor McCarthy a couple of years ago, he came out, you know, talking about he had a concussion and stuff like that. And he was sort of the first one I think has ever really talked about over here, and I think he helped pave the way for it. And then obviously a lot of jocks back in Europe talking about, you know, the, you know, struggling with mental health and stuff like that. And it's a big thing a lot of people don't realize, you know, jocks go through a lot of stuff. So it's good to be talked about and for it to be acknowledged.
Yeah, no doubt. It's more courageous to talk about it than not, that's for sure. And all right, for the Fanticipate question of the day, who is your biggest fan as a jockey?
My biggest fan? What, for like me?
Your father, parents, trainer, who would be your biggest fan? Mine would be my dad from when I was a little kid. So your biggest fan of your career?
It's a good one. That is a good one. I mean, there's a lot. In the jocks room, you know, here, there's been a lot of jockeys that kind of take me under their wing. You know, from Robbie Alvarado, Corey Lannery, Chris Landeros. They've all been great friends and great mentors to me. So they're definitely, you know, some ones I definitely look up to in the jocks room. Have a lot of respect for them. And then trainers, you know, God, There's a lot, you know, there's a lot of people who have been very good to me. I definitely got to give shout outs to, you know, Phil Sims, Phil and Matt Sims. They were great supporters of mine when I first come to Kentucky. Brett Calhoun, Shane Wilson. And I mean, honestly, my favorite jockey got to be probably Joel Rosario, actually. I really, really rate him and Jose Ortiz, and they're great guys as well and always been very nice to me. It's funny, you know, like back home, my favorite used to be Joseph O'Brien and Frankie Ettore. They were my two. And then I got to say my hero really is Sumat Prescott is my main hero as far as like being such a great horseman and a great mentor and a great just character. He's probably the number one, I'd say, Sumat Prescott.
That's Jack Gilligan. Gets an appointment on October 14th. If it doesn't go well, we'll get you a job on HRRN.
It sounds good. I'll be looking forward to that as well. That'd be good.
That's Jack Gilligan.
Fun visit. I'm back to take you on a stroll through racing history after this word from My Racehorse and Fanticipate.
Want to get closer to your favorite stars in racing? Fanticipate is an online auction platform where fans can bid on unique items from their favorite competitors before the gates even open. Compete with other fans to win items from owners, trainers, and jockeys participating in select Breeders' Cup Challenge Series races and more, and take home a piece of the race. Visit Fanticipate.com for more information and to view our live auctions. Own a piece of the action with Fanticipate.
Experience the thrill of racehorse ownership with My Racehorse Microshares. From the team that brought you Kentucky Derby winner Authentic, My Racehorse offers affordable racehorse ownership for less than $100 with no ongoing fees. My Racehorse features top trainers including Todd Fletcher, Steve Asmussen, Richard Mandela, and more, along with a supercharged mobile app that allows you to purchase shares online. Enjoy insider access to your stable and attend exclusive events. Visit MyRacehorse.com and become an owner today.
All right, coming up next, it is Kurt Becker's Stroll Through Racing History. That's next on the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment on HRRN.
A five-time graded stakes winning earner of almost $3 million, Airdrie Studs Collected is the all-time leading earner by City Zip. Winner of the Grade 1 Pacific Classic over Arrogate, Collected also romped by 14 lengths in the Grade 3 Precisionist Stakes, defeating Accelerate. Collected bred full books of quality mares in his first two seasons, and his first crop yearlings will be unveiled at public auction later this summer. Collected stands at Airdrie Stud for 17,500 stands and nurses. Think about it.
Watch and wager on world-class racing from Woodbine Racetrack with Thursday, Saturday, and Sunday post times of 1:10 p.m. Eastern and a Friday post time of 4:50 p.m. Eastern. And on September 18th and 19th, you are not going to want to miss another big 2 days of racing with four Grade 1 races, including three Breeders' Cup Challenge Winning Your In races featuring the Woodbine Mile, Natalma, and Summer Stakes. For more information on racing and handicapping, visit woodbine.com. That's woodbine.com.
The Adidas Spring Stallion roster is loaded with classic bloodlines and classic performance.
Oh, the classy point of entry would not be denied.
Dynaformer Zaire Point of Entry, a global sire with black type horses in five countries, and the number one sire of Grade 1 performers in his crop. Multiple Grade 1 winner Shaman Ghost, the best son of Ghost Zapper, whose two-year-olds race this year.
And it's going to be
Silent Name, the only son of Sunday Silence at Stud in North America, and Canada's champion sire 3 years in a row.
Silent Poet in front of the Neotic, and this one's for you, Martha. Silent Poets won it.
And the newest addition to the Adina Springs roster, American Guru, from a proven winning family, steeped in tradition, with a strong Mr. Prospector influence on both sides.
But American Guru continues to keep on giving. And American Guru has dominated.
Classic bloodlines, classic performance. Visit AdinaStallions.com.
The spring summer meet is just heating up at Gulfstream Park, with racing now through September 26th, Friday through Sunday. Look forward to the FTBOA Florida Sire Stakes Series starting July 31st. And stay in on the action from the comfort of your mobile phone with First Bet, the official app of Gulfstream Park. For 10 Palms reservations, stake schedules, or tips and analysis, visit GulfstreamPark.com. We are now fully open for public viewing.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Hello, I'm Kurt Becker. Thanks for joining me as I take another stroll through racing history, presented by Lane's End and Keeneland. She was the first British-based racehorse ever to win a Breeders' Cup race, and this weekend, the New York Racing Association remembers her with a stakes race named in her honor. Her name was Pebbles. Foaled on February 27, 1981 in Great Britain, Pebbles was a chestnut filly with a blazed face. She was small and delicate, with trainer Clive Britton saying that she reminded him of a French model. He attributed the filly's quick turn of foot to her sire, Sharpen Up, while saying that her stamina came from her mother. Despite her European origins, Pebbles carried strong American influences in her pedigree. Her paternal great-grandsire was Native Dancer, named Horse of the Year in the U.S. for 1954, while her maternal family was the same one which produced Round Table, the 1958 U.S. Horse of the Year, and winner of three consecutive titles as America's top turf horse. Stabled with Clive Britton at Newmarket, some 65 miles north of London, Pebbles began her racing career in 1983 by winning two of six starts as a juvenile. She returned as a three-year-old to win the 1,000 guineas at Newmarket, a performance which was sufficient to convince Sheikh Mohammed bin Rashid Al Maktoum of the Dubai royal family to purchase her for an undisclosed price. The rumor was that the Sheikh had paid $3.5 million U.S. for the filly, but his advisors told the media that the price had been considerably less. Regardless, Sheikh Mohammed, a man who had 300 horses in training worldwide at the time and who had never counted Clive Britton among his trainers, chose to retain Mr. Britton as the trainer of Pebbles. It would prove to be a wise decision. That's not to say there weren't a few bumps in the road. At Royal Ascot in June of 1984, Pebbles was the beaten favorite in the 1 mile coronation stakes, and she sustained an injury soon thereafter, which kept her away from the races for 4 months. When she came back to the races that fall, though, she gave a sterling account of herself by finishing runner-up by a neck against males in the Champion Stakes at Newmarket. The following year, as a four-year-old in 1985, Pebbles made history by becoming the first victorious filly in the 99-year history of the Eclipse Stakes at Sandown. She carried 130 pounds that day and showed the ability to stretch beyond a mile, going a mile and a quarter and beating males under jockey Steve Cawthon. 3 months later, in October, in the Champion Stakes at Newmarket, Cawthon was committed to ride Epsom Derby winner Slip Anchor. Ireland's Pat Ettery would get the call on Pebbles. The filly would respond by beating males once again, finishing three lengths clear of Slip Anchor and winning her second stakes at a mile and a quarter. The victory in the Champion Stakes convinced Sheikh Mohammed to send his filly to Aqueduct Racetrack in New York for the $2 million Breeders' Cup turf. Not originally nominated to the Breeders' Cup, Pebbles would have to be supplemented for $240,000. She would also have to stretch to a mile and a half while negotiating the tight left-hand turns of a 7-furlong turf course. It was a lot to ask, even of a filly which trainer Britton had already declared to be the filly of the century. Britton, who described Pebbles as very intelligent, said the filly was so intelligent that she often got bored with her surroundings. She liked activity. As a result, she loved the sights and sounds of New York, of Aqueduct, and of Breeders' Cup Week. In fact, she thrived on it. On November 2, 1985, Pebbles went to the post as the 2-1 betting choice in the Breeders' Cup turf at Aqueduct before a crowd of 42,000. She got away near the back of a 14-horse field. She was checked twice as she tried to begin moving up the rail. She was impeded sharply on the final turn. But as Tom Durkin would note in his call, this was a super filly.
Pebbles with racing room now, and a daring move by Pat Ettery, and Pebbles has taken the lead. It's Pebbles now in front. Strawberry Road coming after it from the outside. Strawberry Road and Pebbles, they're dueling to the finish. Pebbles is game and determined. Strawberry Road driving hard. They're running out of ground. England super filly. Pebbles has won it. And Pebbles saving every bit of ground. Pat Ettery, a daring move at the top of the stretch, moved her through a narrow opening as the field turned for home and went on to victory in this $2 million turf classic.
Breaking the Aqueduct course record by covering the 12 furlongs in 2 minutes 27 seconds flat, Pebbles had shot up the rail in the final furlong to become the first British-based horse ever to win a Breeders' Cup race. Jockey Pat Ettery called her a brilliant runner, saying, "You simply wait for holes to open and she goes right through them." Clive Britton called it the filly's most satisfying win because of the mile and a half distance, the most demanding of her career. Pebbles would retire from racing following her Breeders' Cup triumph, having won 8 of her 15 career starts with $1.4 million in earnings. Entering the broodmare band at Sheikh Mohammed's Darley operation, she produced 11 foals and enjoyed a 4-year retirement before passing away in September of 2005 at the age of 24. The New York Racing Association remembers Pebbles tomorrow on Sunday, September 19th, with the Pebbles Stakes for 3-year-old fillies at 1 mile on the turf at Belmont Park. And we join them in remembering the English filly who captured America's heart. Please join me again next week as I take another stroll through racing history, presented by Lane's End and Keeneland. For HRRN, I'm Kurt Becker.
Oh, what a story. When I come back, it is time for this week's edition of our brand new segment, I Ask, They Answer, with Dell Romans and Tim Wilkin. This is the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment on HRRN.
The richest meet in Oak Lawn's history begins Friday, December 3rd through Sunday, May 8th. The 66-day meet will offer more than $45 million in purses with 36 stakes races totaling $12.3 million. And all allowance races are now worth $100,000. Oak Lawn boasts the richest Triple Crown Prep Series in the country, highlighted by the $1 million Rebel on Friday, February 26th, and the Grade 1 Arkansas Derby Saturday, April 2nd, now offering a purse of $1.25 million. Learn more at oaklawn.com.
Grade 1 winner and track record setter Lee. Like their sire, his runners have excelled on both dirt and turf, including these standout performers.
And Dipping In will steal this one. Can you see it? Dipping In on top by Link.
Fastest in Queen Nakia. Here's the finish. Gibberish wins the treasure chest.
Out of a Galileo mare, this dual surface star has sired juvenile stakes winners on both dirt and turf. Lee, standing at Claiborne Farm.
Live racing is back at Churchill Downs September 16th through October 3rd. With the same strong purses back from summer and 4 new stakes races, you won't want to miss live racing at Churchill Downs. With the win in your end Grade 3 Iroquois, a Derby points race, and Grade 3 Pocahontas, an Oaks points race on September 18th, plus the new Bourbon Trail, Louisville Thoroughbred Society, Harrods Creek, and Seneca Stakes, this September meet is sure to be full of excitement. For more racing information and to get your tickets today, visit ChurchillDowns.com.
The thrill of thoroughbred racing is back at Laurel Park. The brand new dirt surface and world-class turf course are ready for the races. Spend an afternoon dining with someone special at your choice of restaurants. Grab a bite with friends at the food court or relax and enjoy racing action from around the world in the sports bar. Laurel Park has it all. The beer is cold, the action is hot, and the horses are fast. Nothing beats a day at the track. Live racing Thursday through Sunday, post time, 12:40 p.m.
Hi, this is Jockey John Court. You're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Brigadier General and Stellar Tap, they are heads apart. They've got 4 lengths on Vodka Mardini, who is running in third. On the outside is Predicted, Immokalee, now gains ground, coming through down at the rail. Farther back, it is Martini and the Moonshine. And then Keep Calm, a Carry On, as the field comes off the turn and enters the stretch. And it is Stellar Tap who has the lead here over Brigadier General. Stellar Tap is in front as they come down for the eighth pole. Stellar Tap is the leader. Then Brigadier General and Immokalee. This is going to be a Saratoga memory for the ages with this victory by Stellar Tap. Steve Asmussen is now North America's all-time leading trainer.
Well, welcome to this week's edition of I Ask, They Answer with two gentlemen who are always more than happy to share their opinion. Trainer Dell Romans, fresh off a 2-win day at Churchill Downs yesterday, and turf writer Tim Wilkin, who did not settle a winner yesterday, and he currently stands about 2,100 wins behind Dell Romans in the standings. Guys, good morning. Happy to do this again.
Yeah, it's good to be back. This is getting to be fun.
All right, guys, happy to have you with me. I Ask, They Answer. We just heard the call of Stellar Tap, who is going to be the 3-1 morning line favorite in today's Grade 3 Iroquois at Churchill. That's a race that our friend Dale Romans, who is with us now, has won 4 times, including each of the last 2 editions. He'll try to win it again later today. But Stellar Tap, is going to be forever linked to his Hall of Fame trainer, Steve Asmussen, on a whole different level, regardless of whether or not he wins this race or any other race in his career. It was his maiden-breaking score at Saratoga on August 7th that provided Asmussen with milestone win number 9,446, which made him the sport's all-time wins leader, surpassing the late Dale Baird. Dale Romans, as a trainer who has saddled exactly 2,100 winners, reaching that milestone yesterday, I'm going to start with you. When Steve Asmussen finally decides to end his career and hang it up, is this a record that is never going to be broken?
I thought Dale Beard's record would never be broken. So, somebody's going to have to work awful hard for an awful long time to pass him. And, he's liable to double it. Who knows? He's still going strong.
Timmy, how about you? You think this one will be broken?
You know, I was looking at some records in sports. And, everyone says records are made to be broken. But no one's broken Joe DiMaggio's hitting streak, 56 games. No one's going to break Cal Ripken's games played. Wayne Gretzky has the all-time record for points in the NHL. And what Steve Asmussen has done is just, it's mind-boggling. I mean, he's only 55 years old. He's got 9,000 whatever it is wins. And there's no one really on the horizon that's going to catch him. And the thing with Asmussen is he's got so many darn horses. I mean, like today, for example, he's running 14 horses around the country at five different tracks. Who else does that? I mean, no one. I think that as long as he keeps getting the horses that he's got and he keeps winning these races, I don't know how anybody is going to catch him. And you look at the purses that he's won, the money he's won, $366 million, whatever. Dale Baird only won $35 million. Obviously, he was racing in West Virginia, and he wasn't getting the big stakes horses that Asmussen has had. And also, if you did a talk earnings, Todd Butcher has more of your earnings than Steve. But as far as the wins he's got, unless the only guy that I think can beat him is Dale Roman.
Yeah, no, I don't want to work that hard. I see how hard he works all the time. He has said that he's going to back down some after he got the record, but none of us believe that. I don't think he can.
Yeah, it's just a phenomenal feat that, I don't know how he can have much of a personal life when he's got so many horses at so many different tracks and he's always going somewhere to watch him run. I mean, it's a record that I really don't think will be broken, at least not in my lifetime.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
but I never say never either.
It's certainly unbelievable. Like Dale said, he never thought Dale Baird's record would be broken. Well, it has been, and there's a new leader in the clubhouse, if you will, in Steve Asmussen. All right, let's move on to the next topic.
Hey, Mike, can I ask one question to Dale Romans?
Go.
Dale, I noticed there's a horse that I've always been interested in of yours that's running today, Dennis's Moment. Can you give me a little update on him?
Dennis is doing great right now. He's had his ups and downs, and of course, stumbling out of the gate, the Breeders' Cup as a two-year-old at 3-5 might have been a low point in my career, but he ran huge the last race. He got in a lot of trouble, still came back and ran big, and I expect him to run well tonight. I mean, it's a tough race, but he's an awfully talented horse.
I mean, with just to stay on that for one quick second, Dale, when you have a horse like that and he doesn't live up to those expectations at the start, how frustrating is it? I know he was frustrating to you.
Oh, it's extremely frustrating. There's a lot of pressure put on because, he's such a popular horse and he is so talented. But I'm telling you, when he stumbled out of the gate, he got a little jammed up, but I think it mentally affected him. And it took a long time to get him back to where he is today, but I thought that last race was pretty spectacular, and we know he's got tons of talent, natural talent, and I hope he runs huge tonight like I think he's going to.
All right,
it's
here's
incredible
my question.
I mean, the times he's drawn to one hole, though.
Yeah, here's my question for Dale. Dale, I know that you are tied with Bill Mott for most wins all time in the Iroquois, and you've won each of the last two runnings. Do you make it three in a row later tonight?
You know, that horse is a talented horse. And, I mean, there's some horses on there, better speed figures and stuff. But if you watch, look at the race close, he's the livest closer. So if we get a lot of pace in front of him, I'd like to make it number five.
All right, maybe it happens for Dale Romans. Maybe he is at the top of that list later tonight. We'll see. All right, guys, let's move on to the second topic that we have here on I Ask, They Answer. Stronger Than You Know was absolutely stronger than her competition in a 5-furlong allowance victory at Monmouth Park on September 3rd, but hold all tickets. She may have had help in overcoming that late deficit, as jockey Thomas Mejia was found to have an electrical device in his hand when entering the winner's circle. The Monmouth Board of Stewards handed Mejia a 10-year suspension, fined him $5,000. In addition, the stewards referred the case to the New Jersey Racing Commission with a recommendation that Mejia's license be permanently revoked. So I'm going to ask you both, is a decade-long suspension and a $5,000 fine enough, or should the New Jersey Racing Commission do even more?
Tim, you go first.
Well, man, when I saw that picture, I couldn't believe it. I mean, how stupid is this guy? Putting a buzzer in his hand, and he, with the way social media is, the way photographers are, did he really think he was going to get away with not anybody seeing it? I mean, that is just incomprehensible to me, and I pray to God that the trainer didn't have anything to do with it either. He's seen anything about that. But I think you got to throw the book at him. I mean, because, you know, with everything that's going on in Jersey, I know that the new rules with the riding crops, they can't use them except for safety. And I know that these jocks are trying to do anything they can to, you know, they got to put food on the table for themselves too. But you don't use a buzzer like that and knowing that it can end your career, which it looks like it has done for Mejia. I mean, I think that whatever he gets, I have no sympathy for him.
I agree. You know, it's no different than stealing. Run better, and the jockey next to him didn't have a sheep. Then he just stole that guy's property. No money from the owners. It's no different than somebody. Stole him out for life.
Yeah, I think I got to agree with that. I mean, it's you know, the evidence is right there. It's right in his hand. You can't.
Right, and I can't believe he wasn't arrested. Fixing the outcome of a sporting event or something. It's crazy. And if, you know, I don't know. That's been an argument for life if it makes a horse run faster. But you take away the whips, nobody can encourage your horse, and you're using that to encourage your horse. It's got to make a difference.
I mean, they're doing anything they can now because they're trying to compensate for not having a whip, but that isn't the way to do it.
Do anything you can legally. Don't steal from everybody else. What makes you so much better that you can go do something illegally just because you're dumb enough to drive? You'll make more money. You'll get at some point. It's very frustrating thinking somebody
I agree.
Yep. Yeah, and frustrating too for those of us.
It's much different than a little bit of an over illegal medication that's used. It doesn't affect the outcome of the race. Something like that could make the horses go third. Get rid of them. Next topic.
Yep. Next topic indeed. How about this one? The new synthetic Tapeta racing surface is just about completed at Gulfstream Park. The multi-million dollar project, which also includes a new drainage system, is going to make Gulfstream the first paramutual facility in the Americas with three distinct racing surfaces, dirt, turf, and now synthetic. Smart investment by Gulfstream or not? Dale, let's start with you. All right, having a little trouble listening to Dale here, trying to get a hold of him. Dale, hold on 1 second. We'll try to fix that connectivity. Timmy, let's go to you for this one. Smart investment by Gulfstream or not?
Yeah. I mean, the more surfaces you have, the more horses I think you're going to get to be able to run there on different surfaces. I mean, the Tapeta is, I know it's been backed up a little bit because they were going to start earlier, but they got to wait because I think that they're waiting on a rail to be shipped into Florida. So it's going to be a week away. And Mother, and then they're still working on the turf course. But once everything gets all straightened out, I would think that you're going to have so many more betting opportunities and with horses coming from different locales that they do anyway to go to Florida. And with the three different surfaces, I think it's a win-win for everybody.
All right, I think Dale's back with us now. Dale, good investment by Gulfstream or no?
I don't know. I hate to see them tear up that beautiful wide turf course they had. I know it got overused, and I'm kind of in the ballpark that we've splintered racing so much with so many different categories for different types of conditions, and now surfaces and horses are becoming so specialized. I think it adds to the smaller field size. I think its primary reason for being there is if it comes off of the turf like it does in the summer so much, that they'll hold horses in by running on the synthetic. If that happens, it's going to be a good investment for them. I don't want to see all these races in the condition book. Extra races for horses on Tapeta, inner Tapeta, inner grass, inner dirt. Eventually, you split it up. There's not enough horses to fill all the different types of races. But if they do use it as an off the turf fixing that problem, then it'll be a good investment.
All right. Well, that's topic number three. Two more to go. Here's topic four. Last week, I asked both of you if Luis Saez is the best jockey in the game today, coming off of that riding title at Saratoga. Let's spin it a bit differently here this morning. If you absolutely had to win one race, of course, Dale's a trainer, Timmy is not, but he is a fan of the sport and he writes about it. Which jockey are you choosing to ride your horse? Dale?
Joel Rosario. Short and sweet. He rises to the occasion. Of course, Johnny's won the biggest race of my career for me, and he's awfully strong too. But if you're gonna make me go to war to win the Kentucky Derby, and I can pick any jockey and any horse that I wanted, it would be Joel Rosario. I think he finishes strong. He doesn't have a flaw in his riding, and he's just a great jockey.
Timmy,
now this is like any jockey in history, right?
Any jockey, yeah, you can pick anybody you want.
Oh, well. Born in the SB active jockey, Timmy.
Well, I thought it was going to be any jockey.
Okay.
Well, Timmy, who do you like?
It's kind of hard to leg up Eddie or Carroll right now.
Well, I know that, but I'm just. But of course, this is all this is all speculative. So I'm thinking. All right. Well, I'm going
to give you. Maybe someday I'll have the right to make that decision. I'll have a good enough horse. I can just pick whoever else.
Well, if I had to pick any jockey from history to ride a horse that I was going to bet on to win for me, I'd pick Jerry Bailey because I thought he had the best clock in his head of any jockey that I've ever seen. And you know, his record speaks for itself and what he's done. But if you want to make it just current jockey, well, I'm going to take Irad Ortiz. I think he's fearless, tenacious, does whatever he has to do to win. I just like the way he gets a horse into position. But again, that would be on the dirt. If it was on the grass, I agree with Dale because I think Rosario is the best grass rider in the world.
Well, Dale, you know, Jesus, we can
hey. Jesus Castanon is not happy right now.
Oh, is that right? He's one of my favorites, if everybody knows. Listen, they're all good friends of mine. There's so many great jockeys out there, as we talked about last week. It's splitting hairs with any of them. I just didn't want to be a cop-out, and so I'm gonna stick with Joel. But if we're going back into history, you got to give me Pat Day. We've had a lot of good success together. He's springboarded my career just riding him early in my training career, and he's a great jockey. But Kevin, interesting, I was out with Angel Cordero at Saratoga one night earlier this year. You know, you talk to people about who the greatest jocks of all time were. and he's a student of the game for sure, and his name's always brought into the picture. And he says Eddie Arcaro. He said Arcaro changed the game. He said he changed it. He was the first one that started jacking his irons up and getting in the squatted position and changed. People emulated him, and that's why he says he was the greatest jockey of all time.
Well, he was certainly the toughest. I mean, how many times did he get hurt? And he just bounced right back up. I mean, there were a couple times he didn't, where he missed time. But, boy, what a tough guy he was.
Yeah. And it's a fun conversation to have with different riders and, you know, some of the greats I get to hang out with. And just sitting talking horse with an angel that night. I think we stayed up till about out just sitting talking till about midnight about great horses and horses he rode, horses he got to see ride or run, and riders he rode with. And it's a lot of fun. I've had that conversation with a lot of great jockeys.
Angel wishes he could still be riding today.
Had a big win with a guy named Ramon Dominguez out there in California, Little Mike.
Great jockey. He has to be. I can tell you a quick story about that, too. One time at Saratoga, they brought in all the Hall of Fame jockeys that were living. I think there was only a couple of them that missed out. It was a really cool event, Tim. I'm sure you remember it.
I remember it.
And I walk outside, and Ramon is standing there, and he's like, like it's Christmas Day. He's so excited. He said, you won't believe who I was just talking to. And he said, I'm talking to Georgie. I was talking to Angel, Lafitte. And we're all just standing around over Jacinto. All just standing around over there talking. I said, you silly son of a gun. Don't you realize you were ever bit as good, if not better, than every name you just reeled off? And he looked at me kind of funny. And he says, I think that you're a little biased because we did something special together. And we did, but that's not true. He was as good as anybody who ever threw a leg over a horse.
Yep, I love it. All right, we got to move on. We're down to the final minute and a half here. So last topic, this should be fun. Both of you come at this from opposite sides of the fence. You know, almost as soon as the winner crosses the finish line in a big race, it often turns into chaos trackside from a media perspective because you have various outlets attempting to talk to winning connections and even the connections of the horses who were beaten. Should racing set up a more streamlined and structured process for post-race interviews, or is the current system working? Dale?
The current system works. You get raw emotion when they cross the wire. No press conference. Go watch the Breeders' Cup press conferences or watch the interviews immediately after the Winner's Circle. The Winner's Circle, you're always going to get the raw truth and emotion, and it's much, much better. What we need to do is have some of these people like yourself come up with better questions. Now, that's all, that's what we need to do. And then if we don't soon, I'm going to drop this program. Goodbye.
My goodness.
The ultimate mic drop.
But the thing is, with this kind of thing, after a race, it is chaos. It's just especially trying to get losers. And losers are all ticked off when they don't – there's no – I think they should have a little bit of a cooling off period because a lot of times you won't get anything out of them. Following jockeys through the crowd is – it's just not a – it's not a professional setting. I mean, I think that, you know, they do – you know, the Kentucky Derby, the Preakness, the Breeders' Cup, they do all that stuff. I think that they should do it for all grade one races. They should have some kind of media thing where it's structured, where you're not just, tripping over yourselves and going through and banging in the fans trying to talk to these guys. It's just it's a tough thing. And I'm going to start asking Dale Roman's tougher questions then.
We'll start that next week. Tim Wilkin, Dale Romans, I Ask, They Answer. We're back at 10:30 Eastern next Saturday as well. Timmy, appreciate it, my friend.
Hey, it's always a pleasure, Mike. It's always a pleasure to talk with Dale.
All right, we'll talk again soon. I'm back with more. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Gainsway Stallion Caraconti is off to a strong start at stud. A leading sire amongst his crop by percentage of stakes horses, top runners by Caraconti include graded stakes winners Kenzai Warrior.
But Kenzai Warrior is sticking his head down and getting up. Kenzai Warrior wins the Horace Hill.
Sole Volante.
On the outside, Sole Volante runs by the leader. It's Sole Volante in front and going away.
Two-year-old stakes winner Spanish Love Affair.
16th to go, Spanish Love Affair almost home. Spanish Love Affair lives up to the hype and wins it 1-2.
And dual surface dynamo, Princess Grace.
16th to go. Princess Grace still in front. Pasta Plate is trying hard, but she's second to Princess Grace. Streaking under the wire, the three-length winner.
A rising star with greatest stakes winners on both dirt and turf. Kara Conti, standing at Gainesway.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence educating and developing industry leaders for over 33 years. Classes are taught by industry experts in the state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
On the battlefield, there's a saying America's military men and women live by. Never leave a fallen warrior behind, ever. Off the battlefield, Wounded Warrior Project operates with the same goal. We leave no warrior behind. Wounded Warrior Project is a nonprofit organization created to help our men and women returning home with the scars of war. Whether those scars are physical or mental, we're here to make sure that they heal. And whether it's helping those with post-traumatic stress disorder live a normal life again, or giving much-needed support to injured warriors and veterans hospitals. Because no one deserves our help more than the men and women who risk their lives to keep us safe. Wounded Warrior Project. We never leave a fallen warrior behind. Ever. Learn more about what we do at WoundedWarriorProject.org.
Hi, this is jockey Brian Hernandez. For me, there's no bigger thrill than crossing the finish line in front, and nobody captures the excitement of our sport like Horse Racing Radio Network. Each week, HRRN brings you exclusive talk shows, podcasts, and in-depth conversations with the biggest names in racing, jockeys, trainers, owners, and more. Plus, HRRN is committed to helping disabled riders through their support of the PDJF. So climb aboard a winner today by visiting horseracingradio.net.
This is Eddie Delahousie. You're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Well, my thanks to all the guests who made this show possible this morning. Kicked it off with Kip Elzer from Kirkwood Stables, Dave Rodman, Jim Lawson was here, Michael Ann Ewing reflected on this week's unsung hero, Marvin Navis Prado. That was really special. Darren Rogers from Churchill Downs, Jack Gilligan, who sat down with Sean Clancy for our In the Room segment, Kurt Becker for a stroll through racing history, and trainer Dale Roman's Tim Wilkin with me in I Ask, They Answer just a short time ago. We'll get those connectivity issues straightened out for you in that segment for next week. But fantastic stuff, wonderful program. My thanks to everybody for making it possible. If you missed any portion, head over to our website, horseracingradio.net, and check out the podcast at your leisure. Now for my producer, Lee Delapina, in our Lexington studio, for Chauncey handling all of our social media, I'm Mike Penna. Thanks for listening to the Equine Forum. Go Steelers, bring on the Raiders.